results of the latest Gallup poll? Half the country never even heard of the word Watergate. Nobody gives a shit. You guys are probably pretty tired, right? Well, you should be. Go on home. Get a nice hot bath. Rest up 15 minutes. Then get your asses back in gear. We're under a lot of pressure, you know, and you put us there. Nothing's riding on this except the First Amendment of the Constitution, freedom of the press, and maybe the future of the country. Not that any of that matters. But if you guys fuck up again, I'm going to get mad.
Welcome back, everyone, to Stuff We've Seen. I am Jim. And now, a man whose facts are so slick, no administration would dare revoke his press pass. Till. How's it going, buddy?
The movie studios might revoke my press pass. I'll be kicked out of the press junket. Movies, stuff we've seen. So, okay, yesterday I was looking at my Netflix account and I'm trying to think about whether I want to switch to a Blu-ray plan. I still have a DVD plan.
Wait. Oh, you mean you actually still rent the movies?
I actually still, I mean, I have streaming, but I actually still get DVDs. I don't even have a Blu-ray player.
You don't even have a Blu-ray player? Now that's a shame, sir.
Yes, I know.
I understand where some people might think, well, I have a DVD player. It's fine. I don't need a Blu-ray player, right? But they're wrong, because the quality is so much better. It's just, you know, especially with today's TVs, you're depriving yourself of quality.
The thing is that I stream almost everything, and that's better than DVD quality. I get the DVDs from Netflix for things that I can't find any other way, that maybe aren't even available on Blu-ray, but came out on DVD at some point. Netflix still has them.
I do wish that I had a service like that. So for the occasional movie I would like to see, but I can't find it in any streaming outlet.
So that happened about 6 months ago, which was the last time I got a DVD from Netflix.
Do you still have it, or did you actually return it?
Well, no, I lost it, and then I found it yesterday. And the movie took me back to the first time I saw this movie. It came out in the late 70s, 78, I think. So I was 6 or 7 years old. My sister begged my mother to take us to this movie. And the movie is called Ice Castles.
Wait, you rented Ice Castles, the Robbie Benson classic?
Yes.
And was it the Holly, and she didn't she the one where she goes blind or something?
She's a promising young ice skater who qualifies for the Olympic team, and then she's skating and somebody throws some roses on the rink and she trips on them and is blinded.
It makes a great double feature with Promises in the Dark.
And Tom Skerritt is her dad and Robbie Benson's her boyfriend, and she learns to skate again while blind. Okay, so when I went to see this as a kid, we got to the theater late, like 15 minutes after the movie had started. So we missed the beginning of the movie. My sister was crushed by this fact and begged my mother to let us stay for the second show just to see the beginning again. But then, of course, once we had seen the beginning again, we stayed for the whole movie.
So you had to see Ice Castles in a sense twice.
So I saw Ice Castles twice. And Grant, you know, I'm about 6 years old. And it's a, you know, it's like a teen romance. I was not thrilled by this. It wasn't Disney's The Black Hole or something that I wanted to see.
Well, I can't imagine why at age six you were not enthused about having to see Ice Castles a second time.
So anyhow, yes, I rented Ice Castles because I wanted, I was like, I haven't seen this since I was 6 years old. I want to see what it's all about.
Did you, like, hopefully you weren't watching this alone. I wasn't, you're watching with your kids, maybe, to introduce
No,
them.
I watched it alone.
You're a strange and... man, too. A very strange man.
It's better than it has any right to be.
Now I feel like I've got, believe me, it won't take much to get my wife to watch Ice Castles again. We still have in our search Promises in the Dark because that was like, okay. That was a big thing for her.
So here's the thing. I looked up the director of Ice Castles because I was just curious. And his last movie came out, he died in 2015, I think. But his last movie came out in 2010. And his last movie was called Ice Castle.
He rebooted his own film?
He remade his own film in 2010, and it's the only two theatrical movies he made. Everything else is TV movies.
Well, who's in the reboot or the, you know, the remake is what they used to call it.
Taylor Firth.
Taylor, is that a man or a woman?
I don't know.
You didn't see the new one? I figured, you know, being a Ice Castles completionist, you'd want to see
both. I didn't know until, so now that I know, I've got to see the new Ice Castles. Yes, I am going to watch it. I remember my dad saying when he was a kid, that's how they went to the movies.
Yeah, the movies were continuous.
You just go to the movies whenever you're ready to go to the movies, and you come in the middle of the movie, and you stay until the part where you came in, and then you leave.
You and I are probably part of the last generation where that was still a thing, because I have a few similar experiences when I was 5 and 6, and it seemed foreign for me, but not foreign for my parents. And that disappeared. The idea that you could come in the middle of a movie and watch whatever the double feature was, and then stay a second time or a single feature. I remember Disney movies, they would quite often pair up one of their animated classics with one of their 70s live action classics. And
I will defend Candle Shoe.
No, I'm not a Candle Shoe accuser. Listen, I grew up on a steady diet. I told you that I couldn't see even PG movies until Star Wars.
Oh, I know. So I saw plenty of those Disney live action movies.
Yes, and of course, seeing them now, when you go back and you see the production value with the, they really loved the rear screen projection. Everything was just filmed in a studio, and anything that it was live action that was going on in the background, they just slapped. And as a matter of fact, the most hilarious use of that is the movie Gus, the football kicking mule. That. How could you not see Gus?
I wasn't allowed to watch Disney.
You could see Candle Shoe. I hope you've at least seen No Deposit, No Return.
Yes, I have seen No Deposit.
And the Witch Mountain movies.
Yes, I've seen the Witch Mountain.
Okay, and Freaky Friday, of course, is the gold standard.
Yeah, but I didn't see that until years later.
You son of a bitch.
My mother could not tolerate
Well, I
movies.
Don't blame her. I don't know how my parents did. Well, see, my parents
so, you know,
were very young.
She took me to see Gallipoli.
Exactly. Like, I don't know if I want to see Herbie Goes Bananas, but Gallipoli is playing at the local college, and I'll actually sit there with you. I won't drop you off.
Yeah.
No, but Gus, and I know there's people out there that might have seen this movie, with the football kicking mule. I loved it as a child and then watched it again when I was in my teen years. And it's shocking that all the football scenes, the entire backgrounds are just really bad blue screens or green screens or any screen. And so
it's not even rear projection. It's green screen.
No, I don't know what screen. Maybe it's rear projection. It looks so bad because you can almost see these outlines of the characters. And it's shocking. As a kid, you don't notice these things. But it's really funny just to see. And this is why Disney was in such trouble. It was foundering as a movie studio.
Yeah, well, that's why a whole bunch of people left the animation division.
The Don Bluth era.
The Don Bluth era, yeah.
Though I like The Rescuers. That's
right. But no, but Disney was really cheaping out on everything.
I was going to say that I remember a time my Uncle Phil took my sister and I to see the Apple Dumpling Gang.
It
was paired up with this movie, The Treasure of Matagumbe.
Never seen it.
And I think that was the movie that was the new film. And we came in and we were halfway through the Apple Dumpling Gang. And I was really, I don't think I knew the term pissed at the age of 7 or 8, but I was pissed
right.
that we missed half the film. And I had this gut feeling that my uncle was not going to stay. And I pretty much had to force him to stay so we could see the how this movie, Apple Dumpling Gang, you know, started. Because, I mean, we missed a good, like, 40 minutes of it.
Right. So you had really no clue what's going on.
Exactly. And then, you know, The Treasure of Matagumbe was pretty horrible. But I love the title and the fact that nobody knows this movie.
Yeah, I've never heard of it. Is it available anywhere?
It's, you know what, maybe next year when Walt Disney has their new streaming service, they might put all these films in there. And it used to show up once in a while on The Wonderful World of Disney, you know. But yeah, we have this awesome experience
with Ice Castles, which is where I started off, just made me realize, like, okay, well, the video store is really done. DVD is really done. It's all about streaming now. How do I find things? How do I come across things to watch? And I realized part of the way I find things to watch is I'm a subgenre completionist. I just need to admit that right now. I know we've been joking about it, but it's actually true. Like, I, after seeing Ice Castles, I thought, do I really want to get into ice skating movies? Because yeah. I could. There's, you know, ice skating movies is a whole subgenre. And
Dopic. That's for fans out there of the cutting edge. The great D.B. Sweeney. And here, talk about devotion to the craft. D.B. Sweeney and Maura Kelly, they yep. vowed that they would not ever do a sequel unless the other one was going to be in it.
That is real artistic integrity.
Now, there's been like 7 cutting edges since then, and I have not seen a single one. So I don't know if they ever they reneged on that promise. But I like the integrity of D.B. Sweeney and Maura
Kelly. Yeah, they do keep making cutting edge movies.
Just like they keep making Bring It On movies, where one was enough. And I know there's a lot of people who love that. The movie, the first one, is not terrible. I kind of enjoyed parts, but I just never felt the need to see keep Bringing It On.
Right. Yeah, I haven't seen any of the sequels.
So let's think. If we were going to be a ice skating completionist, is this just yeah. literally ice skating, or is hockey allowed, or what?
I think hockey might be its own subgenre.
Okay, so like Miracle and the Ducks
yeah,
movies.
Yeah, Miracle. Those are in their own genre, I think.
Slapshot,
yeah. Yeah, so I think for figure skating, it's probably a much smaller genre. And I haven't looked into it, but now that we're talking about it, of course, I'm going to, okay, I got to go find every figure skating movie well, that isn't a cutting edge sequel or a TV movie.
All right, well, take away the sequels. I think we have Ice Castles Reboot, which, again, could be sort of like a sequel.
Cutting edge
and then Blades of Glory.
Yes.
I've seen it.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it.
Well, you can't call yourself a completionist if you're not willing to take the
extra mile.
I haven't
seen Blades of Glory. Okay, so I guess I'll have to watch it.
I can't think of any other ice skating. Wait a minute. Time out. This is important. Okay, this is an Ice Castles tie-in. I think it's Holly Johnson. Is that her name? That was in Ice Castles? Well, she played a skater in another movie just a few years later, For Your Eyes Only.
That's right. Yes, Lynn Holly Johnson.
That's it.
Yes, Ice Castles was her first movie.
And then another Olympic skater showed up in, I think, GoldenEye or another James Bond movie in the 90s. And I think she was playing a skater. So there's a theme going on.
Olympic athletes in James Bond movies, a whole new subgenre. So it's a different way of finding movies. It used to be that I would, and here's part of the reason I do it, is that when you're binge watching TV, which everyone seems to be doing now, you go on Netflix and you watch like 8 seasons of Mad Men or whatever, right? And the nice thing about binge watching is you always know what you're going to watch next, right? So you don't have to go through this decision process. Just, oh, okay, here's next on the list. Now, I have a running list of movies I want to see. I know you do too. But sometimes when I get into a subgenre, it's like binge watching TV, but it's on an actor or on, say, Trapped in Space movies, which is a subgenre I binged on recently.
I have to say, this is fascinating because to some degree, I think we all do this a little bit, but you're really taking it to a different level or extreme.
I totally am taking, yeah, and it's a way of sort of coming up with a fun watch list, and then it's like, okay, yeah, like Trapped in Space movies, one after another, and you start to see all these different themes that are working through them, and how different writers and directors sort of approach this, these similar ideas.
How many times people can put a burlap sack on a unmasked stranger?
Well, exactly. I mean, and then, you know, you have, I could start listing Trapped in Space movies, but then there's one like Sunshine. Have you seen Sunshine?
Danny Boyle's Sunshine?
Yes.
This is one of those awkward moments where you feel like you don't want to admit that you haven't seen something, but
yeah.
It was on in the background. My wife was watching it a few years back. That doesn't count because I wasn't watching it, but I know the movie. I just haven't
okay,
seen
so
it.
You should definitely watch it, and here's why.
Okay. I do want to see it. I watched Trainspotting the other day again, but...
okay, you know. Yeah. Sunshine is fascinating because it is it's an homage movie. It is an homage to every other Trapped in Space movie. It just has one sequence after another that's taken from other movies. It is the least original science fiction movie ever made. But it's worth seeing just for that. I know it'll drive you crazy. It's like, oh, here's that shot from 2001. Oh here's that shot from Alien. Oh, here's that shot from Solaris.
Look, you know what? I don't necessarily mind a movie taking something that existed in another film, especially if it's done well. I'm just complaining when there's no purpose to putting a 237 on a door that has nothing to do with the plot. They go in the room if I regard in triangle and nothing happens. Okay. There's no twins. There's no naked lady in a tub. There's nothing. Uh-huh. But they
okay,
just thought it was
watch
cool.
Watch Sunshine and see how you feel about this.
All right. Okay. I will. You asked me to see films. I will see them. I asked you to see films. I hope that you will see them.
I'm not going to ask you to see Passengers.
Oh, okay. So we're going there. Is that what's going to happen? We're going to talk Passengers. Yeah. So I think I knew a lot about Passengers, you know, from
okay. Yeah, we're
from
going
the,
there
from the behind the scenes. Sort of more morality about the film before I ever saw it. And when it came on cable, I watched it along with my wife and my 10-year-old son, who he obviously does not follow all of the, controversies and the critiques of a film. He just can see the film. He hasn't seen also a lot of Trapped in Space movies, right? So, my wife, it gave her what she wanted, and for my son, and it gave him what he wanted. And for me, it just wasn't as terrible as I was getting ready for. However, it's still pretty horrible.
It's awful. I was expecting it to at least be kind of fun, dumb entertainment. It's creepy.
Well,
I could not get over how creepy the story is.
Well, see, here's the thing. I think this is the problem. It's not that it's that what happens in the film is a little creepy. It's that the filmmakers, everybody from the producers on down, nobody ever questioned for one second that the plot was creepy. It caught them all
exactly.
by surprise. And I think you start to wonder, what the hell's going on in Hollywood? Because anybody...
Wait, they were caught by surprise?
Yes, they actually, when the reaction started coming, the critics started pointing out that the idea of him waking her up and
after cyber stalking her.
Yeah. So what would have been better? Again, you start to fault the filmmakers, the producers, everyone. There is a simple fix that would have made it very, very interesting. And that is, what if the roles were reversed? What if
just the gender roles?
Yeah. Well, what if it was her, right? That she was,
it would still be creepy.
It would be, but it could be much darker and interesting only because it's what it's expected. Oh, the man, he's lusting after this woman and then he wakes her up because he doesn't want to spend the rest of his life alone. I think it could have been a much more interesting film if they switched it. Doesn't mean it still wouldn't be creepy, but maybe they could have made it.
The only way they could have saved the film is by acknowledging that it was creepy and exploring that idea.
Well, they started to a little bit more than I thought based on all the critical backlash. But it's still, it was one of those things where, yeah, she rightfully is horrified and mad at him and everything, but then they've got to save the day and work together, and then it seems like everything was all great, and that should
and
not
then everything's
happened.
All great.
If anything, yeah. she should have saved the day and then killed him,
or just lived separately on the ship, or something.
Well,
I mean,
actually, wait, time out. There is actually, I'm stealing something that someone else had suggested. This would have also been great because it could have actually, it could have brought it full circle. He should have died. And she should have been left alone. And then she should have stalked somebody and had to wake them up, because what the moral of the story is, you can't live
alone. That would have been great.
But see, how could you not think of, like, you know, a few different ways that you could turn
at
this
no
around?
At no point did anyone stand up and say, you know, this is a little weird. Like, this is a movie about somebody who stalks somebody and tricks them into falling and manipulates them into falling in love with them.
Oh, passengers.
So, you know, as far as trapped in space movies go, that is not one of my favorites.
It's one of the low points for you.
It's one of the low points.
The old Morton Tilden.
It's no Outland.
I was going to stay away from, you know, this Peter Hyams thing. But the question is Outland, is that a trapped in space movie?
Yes.
Well, I mean, he's sort of trapped on the station a little bit. Because of circumstances, there's definitely the corporate goons are out to get him. But I mean, he's not trapped if it wasn't for the situation.
Well, but it's being in an enclosed location.
Okay.
Right. Where you really can't escape the location. You can't run very far. You're trapped in, like, you know, okay. Apollo 13 is on this list. Moon is on this list.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Silent Running.
Yes. Oh, I'm not a big fan of Silent Running. Whenever it was on as a kid, it was always like a late Saturday afternoon movie. My dad would watch it, and I would be bored.
Well,
I'm just telling you this. That's my memory of it, you know?
You haven't seen it since?
No.
I don't know. I really like Silent Running. I've liked it since the first time I saw it as a kid. It had a profound impact on me as a child. I think I saw it when I was, you know, 7 or 8.
I thought it was depressing.
Well, yes, it is depressing.
Well, I'm just telling you that it was a depressing movie. I mean, as a matter of fact, the idea of trapped in space movies is kind of depressing.
They're all depressing.
What about Gravity? That's a trapped in space movie, right?
Oh, Gravity is absolutely a trapped in space movie. And all the both versions of Solaris.
All right. Solaris, the original, is one of my wife's favorites. But I also like the Soderbergh movie.
I like the Soderbergh movie, too. I think it's its own thing. I don't consider it really a remake so much as a reinterpretation of the book. But I really like the Soderbergh version, actually.
I know. I'm going in a million miles an hour here, but I know that you're very excited about this new movie coming out. It might even be out tomorrow. It's a concept, right? I don't think Hollywood's touched this concept yet. All right, just bear with me here. Okay, there's a guy, right? And what he does is he's sort of a bandit, and he robs from the rich, and then he gives to the poor. And I think is Robin Hood. Robin Hood. That's it. I don't believe Hollywood has tackled this subject matter before. You want to check it out. What the frick, man? How many times are they going to make that dog crap? All right.
This isn't a Ridley Scott movie again.
No,
is it?
That's the thing, is how many years has it been since that awful, awful movie?
See it?
What? The Ridley Scott?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
On cable, it was just, there's nothing going on. It's so uninspired.
It is so bland.
I mean, at least Robin Hood, Kevin Costner in tights had a little bit going for it.
Well, at least it's kind of fun and goofy.
Exactly.
And you have Ridley Scott one is just dreadful.
That's the one, it had Russell Crowe in it, right?
Yes.
But this one, now that looks like it's Robin Hood, the video game. That's what,
right.
You know, this, I don't know who even is the director of this particular version.
I don't know anything about it.
It looks like it would be directed by the guy there, Guy Ritchie. That's what it looks like. It's a Guy Ritchie movie.
Oh, man. Did you see that Guy Ritchie King Arthur movie?
No, that's what this. No, that's another one. This is like a now. I didn't even think we were going to launch into a Jimmy's gripe, but stop with the King Arthur movies. Every like, it's not even every decade has to have.
Okay,
a King Arthur.
I gotta say, King Arthur, Charlie Hunnam, my least favorite actor working today.
There are certain actors that they get a lot of work, and yet the box office results should tell you that maybe people are staying away for a reason. And yeah. He's one of those guys, man. Pacific Rim, right? Was he in that?
Yeah, he's in that.
And then he was also in
Lost City of Z. James Gray movie.
I saw it. It was a classic James Gray. not a lot of things happening that make you feel invested in the movie.
Right.
But
But I love survival movies, so I watched it, and it fails because of Charlie Hunnam.
I know it's a strange thing, but I feel that people who are listening to this program get it. Why? I don't know. It's not that he didn't act bad or anything in it, but then you watch, right? Was it Pattinson?
Yes.
Robert Pattinson is amazing in it.
Yes. Robert Pattinson is amazing. And Charlie Hunnam just has no charisma.
Yeah. The movie looks great. Interesting story. It's kind of a film that they don't make anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm all aboard on that. And his performance is just.
Yeah. Just flat and boring and could have been a really interesting movie.
Yeah. So that King Arthur, now I'm thinking about it, I have not seen it.
I saw it, and it is shockingly bad. And not just because of Charlie Hunnam, but because of Guy Ritchie.
I'm trying to think of the guy. The Lock, Stock, Smoking Barrels movie, I like that.
Yeah, and I liked the Snatch movie, kind of.
Kind of. I don't think yeah. I, you know.
I'd put a kind of on the end of there. Yeah,
because some people really love that. Think it's the end-all, be-all of, you know, cool movies, but not this character.
Yeah, well. Those are the kind of people who put Interstellar above 2001 on IMDb.
Nobody does that. It's a joke. It's a prank because there's no. And I'm not going to have that discussion because it doesn't make any sense. And if you're listening and that's like, you're like, wait a minute, put it. No. No debates. feedback at jimandteal.com. You can write and then I will find out what your address is to make sure that I block you. Because that is not something you have to debate. You can like Interstellar, and I know that you and I could debate that because I probably liked it a lot more than you. But no. It's not even
okay,
the same.
Okay, so, Interstellar has an 8.6 on IMDb, and 2001 has an 8.3.
Well, that just tells you something about the world we're living in now, doesn't it?
Well, that's what I'm getting at. And because 2001 is the greatest Trapped in Space movie.
Well, it's the quintessential.
It's the quintessential Trapped in Space movie. It basically invented the genre. I know there were a few before that. But
was Marooned before that, or is it after? I think after.
I think Forbidden Planet.
I love Forbidden Planet. Listen, this is just a little PSA. If you've never seen the movie Forbidden Planet, find it and watch it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Just a classic.
There's so many movies that we get passionate about and talk about. Good news is it seems like more than ever before, there's so many places that you can get access to movies now right from your home that, you know, when we were growing up, we would freak out if we had all these options.
Well, and it's almost too much access in a way. Like, how do you sort through it and find the stuff, you know, if you're coming at this from – I made a list. I think you had a lot of contributions to this list, but I made an IMDb list of film school for fourth graders.
Movies that a fourth grader should see.
Movies that if you were teaching a film class to fourth graders, these are the movies you would show. And you know what? It was a slam dunk for me recently was Moonrise Kingdom.
Kids love that movie. It's right
kids
there.
Love that movie.
And you know what? When you watch it, and you have kids in the room watching it, you get a new appreciation for a film like that that you don't have when you're an adult kind of going to the theater and seeing it, because it does. It's so in tuned to kind of kid behavior and the way they see the world.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like the way the Boy Scout troop is portrayed is the way a Boy Scout troop would exist in a child's imagination. And I think that's why it appeals to kids the way it does. My daughter loved it. Loved it. She couldn't stop talking about it. And part of the reason is she's at an age where she's starting to watch movies that are not as generic as your average live action kids movie.
Yeah, my kids are, you know, I have one that's only six, and he has no interest, and I'm kind of glad because I think I've seen enough of these movies now that I'm kind of done, but they don't have any interest in seeing the Wreck-It Ralph movie. They have no interest in seeing, I don't know, whatever the other kid movies that happen to be out right now. There's nothing, even the Fantastic Beasts movie, there's been no interest in them seeing
that. No Fantastic Beasts. That first movie was terrible.
I didn't, you know what? It's
terrible.
Funny. I saw
unbearable, no story whatsoever, no structure to the story, no character development, no plot. It was just somebody going on a tour of boring magic stuff.
Now, did you see it in the theater or did you see it on home?
I saw it at home.
Okay, now,
and
you,
it,
hey,
sorry,
listen
it's
to me. No, listen, this is a thing, and I think it's becoming more and more, is the experience that we have seeing something on a small screen can be different. The criticisms of a film's strengths and weaknesses as far as plots, etc., those are all valid. But, you know, I saw The Fantastic Beasts, the first one. I saw it in IMAX. I luckily can get it.
Yeah,
to
I
my,
mean, and it looked
a,
nice.
It was a great, big, fun spectacle. Like some of the creatures, had a good time. However, moments after the movie was over, it started leaving my brain. There was just nothing.
Yeah.
I think the worst sin of all, rather than being a bad movie, it's just a movie that afterwards I had no interest in ever seeing a sequel.
Yeah.
So this one comes out, and my kids, clearly it wasn't that interesting to them because they're not saying, Dad, can we go see that? And so I won't probably see it in the theater, maybe when it's on cable, and I'm just not that interested.
I am, however, interested in Ralph Breaks the Internet.
See,
I don't care if my kids want to see it. I want to see it. I love Wreck-It Ralph.
I liked Wreck-It Ralph when I saw it in the theater with my son, but the preview doesn't look that good to me.
I know. I'm
it
gonna
doesn't,
see it anyway,
right?
Though.
That's the problem. I'm like, eh.
My six-year-old wants to see it, so we just watched Wreck-It Ralph over the weekend. We're going to go see the sequel. It'll be fun.
Let me ask you this. Are you a Rocky completionist?
Are you asking me if I'm going to go see Creed 2?
Maybe. I'm asking you if you're going to see Creed 2.
I am a Rocky completionist.
Okay, so you've seen them all. I've seen them all.
Creed 1 was great.
Did you see it in the theater, though?
No.
Neither did I. So the question is, does this make you want to go, I got to see this in the theater, or can you wait?
I can wait. And the reason is Coogler didn't direct it.
Yep. That's the classic sequel, right?
Yeah.
So we've got, as usual, we've taken a subject and we've gone all over the place with it. But there's one, you had said something about all these choices, and it is true. It can get a little crazy. We can't have access. I think, if anything, we have so much access that it gets aggravating when we can't find a movie we want to watch. It's like, what?
Yeah.
That's not available? Or I have to pay for that because I'm paying for all this other stuff. Why can't I just get that for free? But I mentioned on our earlier podcast episode that Criterion Filmstruck was going away, and I've been having a hard time dealing with it. So thankfully, a lot of film fans have as well. And then there was some good news that Criterion is going to come back in the spring of 2019 with their own streaming service. It will get packaged at a later point with Warner Brothers is doing some kind of story. This is the problem, right? How many of these services can you have? I mean, each studio having a service, you're not going to spend $10 a month on every single one.
On every studio. Well, I like the way Amazon has done it with these channels.
Yeah, but you still have to pay for those.
Well, I know, but it's...
Well, I think that's what the Warner Brothers, what they're hoping to.
Okay.
From what I understand, Criterion will have a channel, and you can subscribe to it. It'll be available before the Warner Brothers. And then when Warner Brothers comes out, it's probably an offering that you'd have to pay for if you got the Warner Brothers. So they were looking for subscribers to just be, you know, initial subscribers. You don't have to pay for anything yet. You just kind of get your information in there. And
I signed up.
And I did too, because there was so much content that was right up my alley.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned.
So you have a list of films you're trying to get through before they close down.
Well, it's just with the holidays coming up, there's no way I'm going to get through all of them. And then sometimes I get sidetracked. This weekend, I wanted to go into some things that I'd put into my Criterion queue. And then my wife is sitting there, and we stumbled upon the uploaded all of these cool documentaries on the Olympics.
Oh, yeah.
And we watched one from the 1924 Paris Olympics.
Cool.
And this amazing, awesome, like, reversal color film from 1956.
Yeah, on, so you get sidetracked. Like, yeah. I got sidetracked by ice castles.
Of course. Yeah, and you know what? There was some ice skating in this 1956 documentary, so there we bring it around full circle. but one of the things, when you're talking about completionists, I am not ashamed to admit that there are a lot of famous directors, foreign otherwise, that... Hey, I went to college. I went to film school. I saw a lot of films, got introduced to a lot, and I walked away from film school with a lot of films I didn't get a chance to see. And this is giving me a chance to go back and watch those. And I find myself going down the rabbit hole of a particular director that I...
Absolutely.
I see this film and I'm like, this is great. And I had never seen a movie from this director again. What else do they have? And so I found myself doing that. And now my time is cut drastically short.
Well, hopefully the future will repair this problem.
Yeah, I mean, believe me, I'm marking the days until they start.
But it is an issue. It's like you got Netflix, you got Amazon, you got On Demand, you got whatever cable channels you have, and sorting through it all and finding, I don't know. I couldn't find Ice Castles. I guess it is on Amazon now. You can rent it on Amazon.
Yeah, but rent. Believe me, I'm not paying anymore if it's on Prime.
No, I don't recommend
great.
Paying, but I do have the DVD. Maybe I should send it to you before it goes back to Netflix. but it is a DVD. And, you know, here's a movie I got from Netflix recently that I really wanted to show my kids. And it wasn't even anamorphic on the DVD, and I had to zoom in on the TV to get it.
That's an old one. That's before the 16:9 format.
Yes.
What was this?
And the movie was Bugsy Malone.
You know what? I'm kind of glad you mentioned Bugsy Malone. That movie is notoriously hard to find.
Yes.
Try going to any streaming service and even typing it and trying to say you want to rent it. You cannot find it.
Yeah.
Why? I'm not sure. It's very big in Europe. And I have a little history of this movie where it came out and it wasn't a big box office smash. And it was one of those films that they released for maybe a week or two in the drive-ins and the cheapy theaters when I was a kid. So it had Jodie Foster in it. And
Scott Baio.
Before What's-His-Face made it uncool to have a thing for Jodie Foster. I was a youngster who was infatuated with her. I'm not ashamed to admit it. And so any movie that she was in, Candle Shoe, Freaky Friday, I was in. I mean, of course, I didn't see Taxi Driver until it was much later. That was my mom wasn't dragging me to the theater to see that. But when Bugsy Malone came out, I insisted we go to the drive-ins and see it. And it was it was the main feature, and I have no idea what was before. Probably Candle Shoe, if I was able to track it down. But Bugsy Malone comes on, and my dad hated with a passion that film. He hated it. Was, you know, it's a hard movie to take when you have kids throwing whoopie pies at each other instead of shooting each other with machine guns,
right?
Because it's sort of like a takeoff on gangster films. And then there was singing.
It's a
by
gangster movie done entirely with children, and their guns shoot cream pies. And
Paul Williams does the music for it, and
yes, and it's a musical.
My dad hated it so much that we, after an hour, he couldn't take it anymore, and he said, "We're leaving." I was crushed.
Oh, man.
I had to wait till it showed up on TV a few years later to finish watching it, because I just, even though I didn't really like it that much myself, I was a film completionist. I just, even if the movie sucked, I wanted to watch the whole thing. I didn't want to leave it. And so I had to wait for Bugsy Malone. And it's one of these curiosities where there's been several times in the past year that I've searched all of my various things looking
It is available to rent on Amazon.
Yeah, I know, but I'm not, you know, I've got like,
well, I know. I'm just saying it does exist.
Yes, Alan Parker.
Yes, Alan Parker directed it.
Did your kids like it?
They loved it.
Oh, man, I wish I could see that. I know. I could. You're telling me I could.
Because it's a movie done entirely with kids. It's the coolest thing. Yeah, it's a. I really like the movie. I first saw it when I was working at the video store in the 80s, and I think it's a really fun movie. It's great for kids, but I understand why your dad hated it. This is not your dad's kind of movie.
There's only a few times in my life that I've ever walked out of a movie. We could talk about that another show, but my dad...
Yeah, I think that could be a whole show.
My dad, at the drive-ins, there was another time... It was like the summer of 85, and I was already, you know, getting too old to really go to places like the drive-ins with my parents.
Right.
I went to the drive-ins with my dad. It was the Karate Kid, which I'd seen, you know, multiple times. It was the second the outdated feature, but the main feature was St. Elmo's Fire. And my dad saw the preview and heard it was good, whatever. So we went.
Yeah.
And again, he made it about an hour and 10 minutes, and that's it. He's like, James, I can't handle this movie. I'm like, Dad, but I want to watch the whole thing. No, we got to go. So off we went. And then I had to wait till like it came out into the cheap theaters later that summer. And my friend and I went to the cheap theaters and saw the whole thing. And again, I didn't even like the movie myself when I saw it at the drive-ins. It was actually better when I saw it the second time. I just can't stand not seeing the entire film.
Right, right. Oh, I get it. I have a list of films probably that I walked out of or didn't finish.
I know there's somebody. This is a Stuff We've Seen shout-out to an early adopter. His name is Bill from Queens. And I know for a fact... that maybe it was in the 90s, he used to make it a point as a protest of a movie that sucked to leave loudly, because he wanted everybody in the theater around to know that this movie is horrible and we should all walk out. And it was that's a great sort of like statement to say, I paid $7, $8, whatever it was then.
But it's not worth my time.
Yeah. I've done that a few times, but not quite with the style of our early adopter, Bill from Queens.
I did see a movie once where everyone walked out. There were only three or four of us left in the theater by the end of the movie.
What was that one?
Sallow.
Wait, I've never seen it, and I really do want to watch it. I thought Criterion might eventually put it on.
Yeah.
And you saw it. You left it too, or did you stay for the whole
thing? Oh, no, I stayed. I stayed all the way to the end.
Was this at the college campus? And did your mom drop you off at the tender age of 12 to see Pasolini solo? I want you to fess up right now.
I don't know if it had ever been released theatrically in the U.S., but this was probably 1988. I was in high school. I had heard about this film, and there was a special screening at Dartmouth College, and I convinced a friend to drive up there and see it with me, and people threw up in the theater.
Well, imagine if you will.
I heard somebody throwing up. People were like, crying, yes, people just were leaving the theater. Like every few minutes, somebody would leave the theater, and by the end of the movie, there were maybe five of us left in the theater out of 150, say.
Because there was no internet back then, and you might have heard, a lot of people they fashion themselves as cinephiles. So, there's this movie, Italian Pasolini. Let's go see it. That's maybe not the intro to Pasolini that you want.
It's maybe not the intro.
I have not seen it. I've seen only selected scenes of it, and it is, it's rough, and I do want to see it. Maybe they should have like a triple feature. Solo, In the Realm of the Senses, and the Tin Drum, and then they can have cops waiting for you outside to take you away. Because all of those movies had controversies and bans and things, that's pretty crazy. I think the only time that I had a similar experience and it was nothing like that was when I saw Happiness.
Oh, yeah.
And they actually had a poster out front that says, listen, this has got this subject matter, and if you don't like it after the first 10 minutes, you're not getting your money back. And there was an older one. I remember sitting there with my friend, and of course I had already known a little bit about it. And you could look in the audience, and I was just like, yeah, that person right there, they're not going to make it. Nope.
Yeah.
They're not. And of course they got up, and there was this older woman. She's like, this is horrible.
Yeah,
I kind of love it. It's like fun
it was
to
good
watch
of the
that.
Theater to provide trigger warnings. Well, I guess that's probably more of a thing now, actually.
Well, I think at the time, I mean, there was such people, you know, there's an NC-17 rating for a reason, and people don't want to, you know, believe that film can shock you, jolt you, test your sort of moral compass. And when you're sitting there, you're watching something and a director forces you to watch material that you yourself aren't comfortable with. It can be very
well
tough.
And even just watching it makes you feel morally complicit in whatever the action is, and it can be really uncomfortable.
You know, it still has not left my brain. It's been a few weeks that I watched In the Realm of the Senses on Criterion. And I, you know, over the years, I've heard, you know, to hear pockets about this film, and I knew that it was very controversial and there was a lot of sex, supposedly. But I myself was not quite prepared for what the movie actually was and the level of sexual content and what it was about. And I was fascinated. I think the movie is a very challenging movie, and it really got me thinking, and just kind of a daring, first of all, for the film director, sort of drawing a line in the sand of Japanese censorship and saying, I am going to make this movie. And it's like a daring you. It's a famous story that everyone in Japan knew very well.
Right.
It's based on a true story. But I am going to tell it in a way that's going to make you really question, like, what's this morality all about?
Yeah, and it engages the viewer in a moral conversation, really. And I think, you know, there's some film, I think Sallow does that. I think In the Realm of the Senses does. There are some, and these I kind of put in this category of like extreme films. But there's a bunch in that category that I
that
feel like.
Subgenre? For completionist?
Yeah, it is a subgenre, I guess.
This is going to be one of the toughest completionist exercises would be to see dangerous movies.
Exactly, extreme movie, and it's I'm not even going to mention some of the titles,
but anyways, believe it or not, you know, for a show where we weren't sure exactly what we're going to talk about, we've certainly talked about stuff for a while, and sadly we're going to have to draw to a close. But I do want to mention a couple things as we're starting to get episodes out there and people are starting to listen. We're available on iTunes, and we're available on TuneIn, and we're also available on Podbean, and that's a bean as in Jack and the Beanstalk.
Is that a .com, Podbean?
Probably, yeah. I mean, you know, at this point, if you can't figure out how to type in something in a search engine, you probably aren't listening to this program. Who knows where else we'll end up showing up. But on if you're finding us on iTunes and you're listening to this show and you like the show, please think about putting a review up. That would be awesome. I think that supposedly helps. Who knows? And if you don't like the show, don't.
Then stop listening.
Stop listening right away. Do not put on a review. Though it might be funny. Is like, if you're going to write a terrible review, at least make it funny. You know, because then people can appreciate it. Like, make it so that it sounds horrible, but people have just got to tune in because it can't be that bad, and then they'll find out for themselves that it is. Or, like I said, if you love the show. If you're an
and also
adopter,
contact us. Give us some feedback. Let us know things you might want us to talk about, movies or subgenres we haven't yet discovered.
Yeah, and you know what? We say stuff we've seen. That does not mean movies only. I think we could do an episode on television at some point. But, you know, television is sort of this vast
thing. I don't know.
Thing,
that's, yeah.
I can tell you, we will never talk about network shows. I don't really watch any of those.
Yeah, I've never seen any of those.
Yeah, most of the shows I watch are these binge or shows on Netflix.
Exactly. Well, and here's a new idea, a new way for people to binge subgenres.
Be a completionist.
Completionist, or you know, not just subgenres, directors, cinematographers, actors. It's a great way to binge.
Yeah, if we were to have a T-shirt for the show, I think it would say something like, "I'm a subgenre film completionist."
Yes, I think. Until next time.
Ooh, I can't wait. Hey, everyone, stay safe out there. I don't know. Goodbye.
Bye.